So yeah, welcome. We are actually on our sixth class. It's a 10-week course, but all of our topics are a standalone topic. So even if this is your very first one, it's fine to start with. It's the foundation course, so we've been going through various main kind of philosophical topics and also practical topics for Tibetan Buddhism. So what we've already covered is Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the objects of refuge. So, how to tell what you put your trust in, how to tell if it's a valid refuge or not, and if it is it going to be able to be something that you can rely on that will actually bring the results that we want of clarity of mind and lasting happiness and things like that. We've also looked at how the Buddhist approach is to look at ourselves as being sick rather than bad. So under the disease of the disturbing emotions, afflicted states of mind that can be healed. And that's the whole reason why we can put in all of this effort, because there is something that we can do about it to get rid of all the negativities and reveal our nature. And how do we do that? Through meditation. So we had one whole class on what meditation is and how it's basically caring for the mind. And the different types of meditation. We've also looked at, well, what is the mind, the nature of the mind? And I had a whole class on discussing rebirth. And so, the rebirth, which is kind of the understanding past or future lives, or that, there is something that happened before and something that's going to happen after this life, is one of the fundamental principles of Buddhist practice. It's not just about this one life. It's a really big picture. And that is something that takes a while to come around. So you just take it easy and absorb things and question. And part of how to start investigating rebirth is to understand the nature of our mind. What is reborn from life to life? How we have a physical body and a brain, and we have a mind. And so the brain has evidence of the mind, but it isn't the mind. Mind is formless, non-physical, by nature clear, and has the function of awareness. And I was thinking the other day about an analogy for this, for understanding our nature. It's like with snowflakes. You know how they say that there's not one single snowflake that's ever repeated? That they're all utterly unique. And you can think of, you can't even count how many billions of snowflakes have fallen in history, and yet not one of them's repeated. So that's kind of like living beings, isn't it? Living beings, each one of you utterly unique. But the nature of a snowflake, it's made of water, isn't it? H2O. So our nature, the nature of our mind, is the same, even though each of us is like expressed as an individual. Anyway, so last week, that's what we were talking about, the nature of mind. So for those of you that were here last week, do you have any questions? How did it go? What have you been pondering for that time? Mind blown? Lots of things. That's a great insight, because how we feel very rarely matches how old we are. So we can be aging and still feel young, but also equally, I know people here in their 30s and 40s that have already started saying, "Well, I'm old." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And it's because they feel old. They're actually not old at all. So, and even way back further, I can remember when I was really little and someone asking my parents, "How old is she?" And my parents said, "Oh, she's 5." And I'm like, "No, I'm 4 3/4, and it's taking forever to get to 5." I really wanted to be a biggie. So, yeah, that's right. The mind. And the other thing, of course, is we can feel young and we forget that our physical body is deteriorating, and then we have funniest home videos. But yeah, the insight is there. That's right. The mind is ageless. And even if dementia and things like that, that's because the technology, the brain, is deteriorating, not the mind. All that racket, the internal racket within the mind. Yeah. You don't even have to understand it. I think even, and we all do this when we do our little motivation, but Amanda, when you become aware of the racket in the mind, instead of trying to get rid of the racket, become aware of like the space that the racket's in. Like you have a big echoey room and there's all the noise. Yeah. So instead of the noise, become aware of that spacious room.
Ooh, nice. Nice. It's
a, take it from someone who has a lot of racket.
No.
Anything else? Yeah, Will, how'd you go?
I think the thing that stuck out most to me was the, like, my definition of mind changed, and then sort of learning how that it's, like, it's naturally blissful, blissfulness is that non-dual awareness.
Yes. Wow. In just 1 week. Yeah, so that's really, so it shows that you've been really pondering this and also like in with your experience. Yeah. Oh, so the polarity is the scientific side of things, the wave and the particle theory, and that's about the real mysteriousness of how things exist on a very subtle level in the physical world. And then when we talk about the mind, we kind of use the word duality.
Yeah.
And we have this sense of it's me here and you there. They support each other. Those two ways of looking at things, the real subtle physical form and looking at the really deep nature of the mind, they're not in contradiction. They kind of start dovetailing together. And, of course, so, you know, here we are going about our day-to-day business. If we can understand the nature of our mind, we're just going to be happier and more calm. But the whole point from the Buddhist point of view is so that we can bring forth all of that potential and stop being divided by the duality of us and them or me and you as if there's a fundamental difference. So, wow, that's great. It seems like it's really hit the spot, this topic. And so what Will's talking about actually, for everybody, just as a reminder, in mid-May, so next month, we have a national tour with a Western monk called Venerable Genden, and he is going to be leading two talks and a weekend retreat on meditation and teachings on resting in the nature of the mind. And he's a really amazing teacher, so it's worth really making an effort to come to whatever you can of that. And I think you will love it.
I'm actually saying I found the concept useful when you're about the sky and the clouds.
Ah, great.
The clouds with the sky, we notice the clouds because of the vastness of our sky, the mind, we are not our clouds.
That's right. That's right. So we are not our clouds. So like Amanda was saying about the racket in the mind, all of the oppression and disturbance in the mind is like clouds in that clear sky. So because the clouds are moving, they grab our attention. It's very hard to look at the space that they're in. But as a concept, it's a really simple, really nice one to remember. So what we're going to have a look at today then is we have this mind which is by nature clear. It goes, the subtle mind goes from life to life. So why do we have the life that we have? And it's about what also goes along with the mind from life to life. So just like a river has stuff in it, what's put in upstream flows downstream. It's more than just H2O in a river. So that's when we're talking about karma. What is left on our mind from past lives, past experiences and actions comes downstream and arrives in our life. And then what we do now is putting more stuff in for what's going to happen next. It's a really big topic, and I just realized as I was making my notes that I've called it all about karma, which perhaps was a little optimistic. But we're going to have a look at the really juicy bits, which is about karmic results, beginning to understand karmic results, and then some general stuff about karma, and then what we can do to purify our negative karma so we don't have to experience the suffering results. So let's do our motivation. So you've all arrived here from a busy day, and now we're physically sitting quietly, even though the busyness of the world still goes on around us. So now we can also settle our mind and just bring your focus gently inwards, just becoming aware of the rising and falling of the breath. You don't have to squish anything out or try and make thoughts disappear, anything like that. Just leave them on the edges and instead have your focus just on the rising and falling of the breath. And don't try and control the breathing in any way. You might have breathing that's uneven, or it might be nice and smooth. It doesn't matter. Just have your focus gently on the breath. And then, as any thoughts or feelings arise, just note them and let them dissolve. Just like clouds might arise in the sky, but then they dissolve back into space. And take a moment to notice your internal weather. Is your mind clean and clear today, or is it oppressed, or is it agitated? So just becoming aware of that internal weather without judging it. Knowing that however it's being expressed, it's all happening in that clear spaciousness of the sky. And then we can set our motivation that everything that we discuss and ponder and learn about can contribute to us clearing our mind and revealing our natural luminous nature, becoming calm and peaceful ourselves, and then being able to bring peace and happiness to all other living beings. So with this motivation, you can gently bring your focus back to the room. And let's have a look at what is karma. And I really love that. That picture, I think it says it all, really. Bit of a time delay between cause and effect. So this is from Venerable Thupten Chodron. This is it in a paragraph, so hold on to your hats. What is karma? How does it work? Karma means action and refers to intentional physical, verbal, or mental actions. These actions leave imprints or seeds upon our mind. And these imprints ripen into experiences when the appropriate conditions come together. For example, with a kind heart, we help someone. This action leaves an imprint on our mind stream, and when conditions are suitable, this imprint will ripen as our receiving help when we need it. If an action brings about pain and misery in the long term, it's called negative, destructive, or non-virtuous. If it brings about happiness, it's called positive, constructive, or virtuous. Because actions aren't inherently good or bad, they are only designated so according to the results that they bring. So Venerable Rabina summed up karma as well by saying karma is Buddha's answer to why. So why do bad things happen to good people? That's often a question that we have. Or why did it happen to me and not my neighbor? You know, we're both right there. How come, like in a tornado, one person's house goes and the other person, nothing? Why did it happen to me? So our Western science explains how things happen in great detail, but never why. They'll explain how the tornado just destroyed the house, but not why did it happen to this person and not that person. And you know, we really need to know why. That's the fundamental thing, isn't it? We get really distressed not understanding why. So karma is, it's a Sanskrit term and it means action, and what it refers to is internal cause and effect. So not the external things, but cause and effect happening in our mind. So the experience of cause and effect in our mind. It's very similar to external cause and effect. We can get a grasp on it by, you know, comparing. But when we talk about karma, it's an experience. So it's an internal thing. And it's a natural law like gravity that's described but not invented. And just like Thupten Chodron said, we actions creating mental imprints that later on ripen into experiences. Now, there's a really nice thing that she also said about putting it together. So the fact that our experiences are results of our actions is not a system of punishment or reward. When a flower grows from a seed, it's neither a reward nor a punishment of the seed. It's merely a result. Similarly, when our actions bring our future experiences, these are just results of our actions, that not rewards or punishments. So I find that really helpful because it pulls it back. We kind of jump to thinking, oh, what did I do wrong? I'm being punished. It's just cause and effect, so it pulls it way back. The Buddha didn't set down commandments, the infraction of which warrants punishment. As the Buddha has no wish for us to experience pain, he'd never judge or condemn us. Our unpleasant experiences arise due to our own actions. Newton didn't create the law of gravity, he merely described how it works. And similarly, the Buddha didn't create the system of cause and effect or karma. He described what he saw after having removed all the obscurations from his mind stream. We may think it's unfair to experience in this life the result of what we did in previous lives. However, it's not really an issue of fair or unfair. We don't say it's unfair that an object falls down and not up, for we know that no one invented gravity. Gravity isn't due to someone's favoritism, it's simply the way things naturally function. So similarly, no one made the rule that if we harm others now, we'll have problems in the future. This is simply the natural result arising from that cause. So I think she puts it really clearly, but I also think that our feelings take a while to catch up, you know, because we see bad things happen to good people or bad things happen to little kiddies and we go, this is not fair, there's an innocent child, and we have this natural feeling of it's not fair. So that's like natural compassion that comes up. And I think even if we've got a lot of kind of inheritance from a Judeo-Christian culture, even if we're not aware of it. Because, of course, it's an innocent child, but that's a result from the past. That child didn't create, it was the past life that created those causes. And now we experience the result, and it's traumatic and awful. But it's certainly not a punishment. It's just kind of reveals the whole tragic nature of how cause and effect work in our mind. And one of the really tricky things is that there is this time delay between what we do and experiencing the result. And the time delay goes over lifetimes. So mostly what we experience in this life, the causes were in the previous lives. And what we do in this life, how we communicate with others and how we treat others, mostly we'll experience the results next life. So there's this time delay, which is why I like that image, the picture, because we do something and it takes a very, very long time before we experience the result. And then we get, you know, we get the result. We go, what? Where did that come from? So Thupten Chodron's example was, for instance, if you see a spider and you're scared of spiders and you squish it, and at the same time that you're squishing that spider and its guts are coming out, or your guts are coming out, you'd never squish a spider again. You'd put two and two together very, very quickly. But there's this time delay, so we don't put it together. And I mean, this catches us out all the time when we're trying to figure out, you know, why did we get sick, or why did the house fall down, and we just think it was because of the thing we did yesterday. But even in the external cause and effect, it might have been something that was cooking for years and years, and we get the result. So far, how are we going? Are there any questions or comments about this general? It's not always like that, but it's a general rule of thumb. There's like Venerable Robina calls it two tracks. So we've got the past life ripening in this life, and then what we're doing is creating the results for next life. In the same life, only if it's a really strong karma with a really intense motivation, you do it, it's really focused, it's a complete action, you rejoice about it, you see the result, you dedicate it, then it becomes a really powerful action. And then you can have some experience of that in this life as well. But even with that, most of that experience will be in the next life. Yeah, so nothing to do with fairness or an external entity judging or deciding, just a natural kind of law of cause and effect.
When you use the example of the tornado blowing down one house, but are you saying that is a result of karma?
Yep. So when a tornado blows down one house and not the other, you can describe the mechanics of it happening. But why this person in this house and not that person? Yeah, but even that, like as to which person's living in which house at the time, it's really complex. But there is no way that science can say, oh, this is why you lived in that house. So it's a deeper question of why. Why was I living in that house at that time that then when the tornado came, it was me that experienced it and not someone 4 meters away? Yeah. Same kind of thing, like with car accidents. You can have how many people in a car, and some people are horrendously injured and others walk away scot-free. So why were we sitting in those seats and not swapped over and sitting that way? We call it chance. So actually, yeah, I've got a few. So chance is what probably what an atheist would say. If you're superstitious, you'd go lady luck. You rely on lady luck. Lady luck was not with you that day. Or some days, lady luck is with you. If you're a materialist or a scientist, scientific materialist, you'd say it's random. And if something comes out better than random, you know it's rigged, isn't it? we can tell a lot about this just by how just our conventions of how we say things. So has anyone ever said, oh, it was meant to be? So that's actually an agnostic thought. So it's meant to be kind of has an implication that someone's organized it, an external factor. So a higher power or a god or something. That's not quite the Buddhist approach either. That's more an agnostic approach. If you're Christian, then it's God's will. And similar though, there is a system of cause and effect. You go against God's will, you affront God, you experience suffering. Go with God's will, you experience happiness. So there's similarities there. Psychology, does anyone know what psychology says? Particularly it's Jung psychology. Big long word, synchronicity. Buddhism kind of goes more towards its mind science. So it's cause and effect, but internal cause and effect, meaning it's about the experience. Because even if you're in a tornado, for instance, and your house is blown down, how one person experiences that, they might be incredibly traumatized, and the other one might be extremely grateful. The whole family was saved, doesn't matter about the house. So the experience of it changes. You're all in the same tornado, but the experience is different. So that's a karmic thing. Intuition? Well, intuition is kind of where we have an inkling of something and we can't quite identify why. So I would say with intuition, after a while, you can identify why. Yep. And people do have intuitions about that. Don't go to work today. I had one of those where I decided, don't get off on the bus here in the city, get off the next stop. And then that afternoon, the three claddings of the glass from the high rise fell down, smashed onto Queen Street, and a couple of people were killed. And I figured out it happened at exactly the time that I would have been walking from that bus stop to where I was going instead of from this bus stop to where I was going. And I'm like, wow. Yes. Okay, so we have different types of karmic result. And generally when we talk about karma, what we're talking about, what we think of is karmic results. So I thought we'd start there with the results because they're really juicy. They're to do with our experience. We can start kind of working backwards in a way. So what we have, three types of karmic result. One is called the fully ripened result. And that is comes from a full karmic action with all of its parts. A beginning, a middle, an end, a motivation, you do the action, it's complete, and you're happy about it at the end. So a full action has the power to throw us into a particular rebirth. So it's called a throwing karma. So, for instance, a good throwing karma would throw you into a life of a human. And you're born a baby, a human baby, that's counted a really good throwing karma because the potential that we have as human beings. But then there's completing karma. And that depends on what type of life you have as a human being. Some human beings have really traumatic lives and some relatively easy. So the throwing karma, the fully ripened result of being born as a human, is counted as being a really potentially fantastic thing, positive throwing karma. Or you might have negative throwing karma and get born as a dog. A dog's life is very limited. And pretty much when you look at all the stray dogs and everything, there's a few pampered dogs. So terrible throwing karma, excellent completing karma. They inherit $10 million from their owner who dies and, you know, but what can you do? It's like all of this wealth. What's it for a dog? They're going to wear a diamond collar. Terrible throwing karma, great completing karma. I look at my cats, you know, they've got very limited interests. They have no way of dealing with their fear. And so even though they're probably, you know, they're pampered, they're really safe, they're in a cat enclosure, no animals are going to eat them, they're not going to eat other animals. So all of that completing karma, they don't have to pay rent, they don't have to cook, oh, they don't have to pay like healthcare, all of this stuff. And yet it's a terrible life. Like there's a bang from the neighbours and they're terrified. Like there's very little that you can do with a life. So it's counted as like an unfortunate ripened result. So that's the really big picture. That is a good question. Yeah, if you're born as a dog, how do you create enough good karma to have a throwing karma that's going to propel you into a better, a more fortunate rebirth?
And aware.
Yeah.
How do you have the awareness to make those decisions?
Yeah. So if you're a dog, like what are the opportunities for a dog to make good karma? Being loyal, looking after their owners. There's all the jobs that dogs do. You know, like some are police dogs, some are guide dogs, some are cattle dogs. So they work. Dogs work really hard. There's the sniffing out bombs dogs, and they really need lots of care because sniffing out dead bodies dogs are from disasters. So I've read about those dogs. They need a huge amount of care because they get traumatized too from finding dead people. So there is some, but then you look at the vast life of dogs, the vast majority of them are like starving strays around the world, aren't they? Then that's why it's called an unfortunate rebirth, because you're more likely to just make more negativity. So a dog then is starving, more likely to fight with other dogs, kill other things, creating more negativity, throwing you into an even worse rebirth. And so it goes down, 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 down. The odds, the chances of being able to create positive karma are really difficult. It's a cycle, isn't it? So the cycle, as we know just from our own life, when we're in a bad mood, what happens? We attract even worse things, and then we do even worse things, and then we wake up even worse. So even just in that tiny little thing, we can see how easy the trajectory is to go down. And so sometimes you just have to go all the way down till the karma runs out. You can't lift yourself up. You're completely overwhelmed by circumstances and negativity. And so that's why every time in all of the Buddhist teachings, we look at setting our motivation to liberate all suffering sentient beings. That's right. Reading especially Dharma books, chanting mantras, reading sutras to our animals. Lama Zopa Mishe, up here, one of the founders of our center. There's this great photograph of him reading the sutras to these goats in New Zealand. And all the goats came from all around the paddock. They're all like crowded in, trying to get close to Rinpoche. And he's just reading the sutras at the top of his lungs. It's the cutest photo. So the goats were very attracted to it. There was no food involved, but they knew something was up. Okay, so then we have two other results. One is the result similar to the cause, and in terms of experiences, what happens to us, and the result similar to the cause in terms of behavior, our personality, our habits. So this gets really, really juicy, because we look at in terms of what happens to us when we're alive. So here we are, we're all human beings, fortunate rebirth. We're all in Australia, fortunate environment. But what happens to us is vastly different, isn't it? And some of us might be going through a good time and others through a bad time. Then in terms of experiences, so I've got this, you know, fella being hit on the head with a cast iron frying pan. So that's a result. The cause must have been similar. In the past, you've bashed someone on the head. Now in this life, someone clonks you on the head. Similar. And I was also thinking of this friend I had years ago, Hugh, who was a really, he was a sweet-ass guy, friendly and really funny, but wherever he went, he'd just fall over things. Things would fall on him. Things would trip over. They'd break. He just like, he's the kind of person, he walked past the toaster would blow up, that kind of thing. And one night we were living in a share house in Petrie Terrace, wooden little wooden cottage. He came to visit. He walked down our hallway, and as he's walking down our hallway, a plank fell off the wall and hit him on the head. Like, he didn't even need a person to hit him on the head with the frying pan. Just things fall out of. So this is a karmic result. Also, in terms of experiences, does anyone here often lose stuff? Often misplace stuff? I have another friend. She's got a pair of sunglasses and a passport in just about every country in the world. So that it's like it's an echo of a karma of in the past having stolen. So now in this life, separated from your stuff. You don't even need someone to steal it, just lose it. In terms of experiences, we can kind of extrapolate out what we're experiencing now. The cause must have been similar, kind of rule of thumb. We mightn't be able to remember the exact life or the exact thing that we did, but we'll be able to figure out it was something similar. In terms of behavior, it's kind of the habit patterns and personality that we bring into this life. Whether we're just habitually short-tempered all the time, or whether we're calm and meek and mild all the time, whether we have, it's easy for us to be patient and kind, or whether it's a real struggle. Whether we're a gifted piano player, whether we're often depressed, whether what else? Whether you say for instance, if you're a kleptomaniac, if you've got this impulse to shoplift, and it's just like, where does this come from? So actually, where it comes from is in the past, having stolen. So then you have an echo in this life of continuing the behavior. So again, you're going to hear about all of my past past nefarious activities. So I had these friends who were really excellent shoplifters, and so they, unbeknownst to me, they'd use me as the foil, because I had no idea this is what they're doing. So we'd go shopping together, and I'd be going, oh, look at this. And behind me, they were like putting all these things in their pockets. They were absolutely brilliant at it. The one time I tried to steal something, I was so hopeless at it. I took it, I dropped it, and made this big clattering noise. I picked it up. I remember it now as this red kind of like fluoro belt. And I picked it up and I went, and I ran out of the shop. I'm like, I am no good at this. I am never doing this again. So, you know, how come they were like born naturals? So where does that come from? It comes from in the past, having stolen. So now the echo of that behavior repeats. So either in terms of experiences, say, for instance, with stealing, all your stuff is stolen. That's the result in terms of experiences. Or in terms of stealing, in terms of behavior, now you're really good at stealing. Or you're forced into a situation where you have to steal to survive, which is worse. I mean, there's countless people in the world like this. That's also a karmic result, where they have to steal to live, to eat. So getting back to your question, then this is kind of begins to show that karma, far from being a judgment of your bad, it's actually a tragedy, because here you are, you've got a karmic result of having stolen in the past, you experience all of your stuff being stolen, or you have to steal to eat, and what's happening? You're making more negative karma, which you'll experience in the future.
Yeah.
So it becomes literally a vicious circle. So in terms of this, in terms of experiences and behavior, does it ring any bells? Are you looking at your life now and your personality going, oh, that's, does it help make some sense? Because in a way, then you don't have to think, I am a bad person. You can think, this is karmic cause and effect playing out. You are not a bad person. You're experiencing karmic cause and effect. Experiencing, you know, bad things or positive things. So here we are, born as a human. We have a better chance at everything, at how to feed ourselves, how to house it, how to live in a harmonious environment. If we were born as a lion, we don't have a choice to be vegetarian. We don't have a choice to how our society is developed. As a human being, we have enormous choices, even facing great odds. And so that's why it's called a fortunate human rebirth, because what we can do with it, we also have a better chance at becoming liberated or enlightened too. But at the very least, we have a better chance that we don't come back as anything worse, but we can come back at least as a human being to continue the work. So I would say here you all are in a Buddhist center. You actually have come back to continue the work, because how did you have this connection in the first place? This is the result of your previous enormous efforts. The fact that you're sitting here with the leisure to even contemplate this and the interest doesn't come from nowhere. That's a result of your past effort.
Cool.
Very cool. Yes, that's right. Yes. So we have lots of seeds in our mental continuum, and depending, we can think of our mind as like this huge field with all these different seeds, positive seeds, negative seeds. And depending on the conditions, depends what seeds ripen. So generally the most recent seeds or the strongest seeds will ripen first. If they're all negative, way back in the past, there might be a positive seed there that you could help to ripen and nurture. So we'll go into the seeds in a moment. But yeah, I mean, the countless potentials or seeds that are on or imprints on our mind, I mean, it's huge. So the fact that we are in Australia, for instance, is really good conditions for developing all of our good qualities. I look at the news and it's just horrendous, and I'm like thinking, how would I be responding if I was over on the other side of the world in Gaza or somewhere? What kind of person would I be? It's really like do we know our own measure of how we're going to respond? So the fact that we're in a peaceful society means that that it's the best conditions then for being able to actually develop our qualities. So the third type of karmic result is the environmental result. And so this is the physical environment that we find ourselves in, and it's a shared karma. So here we are, Australia, largely peaceful. And it's not like Alaska where it's minus 30 degrees, and it's not like the Sudan where it's 50 degrees. It's a nice temperate kind of environment. Also, the type of politics that we have, the type of authority and government that we have is fairly conducive compared to a whole lot of other places in the world. So the environmental result, it's a shared karma, which means it was created together as well. It's a group karma. We created together as a group. Also, the environment's to do with what kind of climate terrain we have, whether we're in a country that has a really rich soil and minerals, or whether it's all desert and parched, all of that kind of thing is also, it's a much longer kind of karmic result that we have. And of course, within that, within the group, there's a whole lot of variations of how we experience it, just like in Australia, a whole lot of variations, even though we're all in the same country. Shall we do a little reflection to let it settle in? So settle your posture and invite a spirit of curiosity to explore how everyday actions shape our inner landscape and the world around us. Let the mind rest, trusting that causes quietly shape results, often long before we even notice them. And make a wish that this reflection brings benefit to all beings. So imagine an apple tree standing strong and generous in an orchard. You may not remember when it was planted or the hand that watered it, or the seasons it endured, yet you're here, sitting beneath its branches, enjoying the shade, biting into a crisp, nourishing apple. So this comfort did not arise by accident. It depended on care, patience, non-harm, repeated again and again in the past. Our actions plant seeds that shape our future experiences. So what kind of actions created this beautiful orchard? What kind of actions led to you enjoying this apple? So they must have been similar in nature, tending rather than taking, protecting rather than exploiting, And as you savour the fruit of your past efforts, ask yourself, what seeds are you planting today through your speech, actions, and thoughts? Like apple seeds tucked invisibly into the earth, our intentions, whether generous or grasping, grow steadily into far-reaching outcomes that one day surround us like an entire orchard. When we forget this connection, confusion grows. We grasp at apples that are not ours, hoarding or stealing from fear of scarcity. Like a thief in the night, this breeds anxiety, craving, preventing true enjoyment of what we hold. The thief's path tightens the heart and narrows the world, while giving enriches the soil, ensuring that trees thrive, harvest, multiply, and everyone has a place in the shade. So where could we practice a small act of generosity this week? We could condition our environment like fertile soil yielding healthy crops, opening the heart, creating spaciousness. And then we can look forward to sharing not just a single apple, but whole orchards of benefit for all. So then you can bring your focus back to the room. And all this talk on gardening is because the gardening example is a fantastic way to actually understand the principles of karma or the main aspects of karma. If we can understand how karma works, then we can actually put in place causes for our own happiness. It's not a fatalistic thing. It actually gives us a lot of agency. So there are four main aspects of karma. I'll read them out. Karma is definite. Karma is expandable. There can be no result without a cause. And karmic results do not fade away. So some of these are fairly straightforward, but the first one is really hard to get your head around because it sounds so simple and yet it's tricky to grasp, and that is that karma is definite because it doesn't mean fatalism. What it means is that it's definite. What are you going to get if you plant cherry seeds? Cherries. That's definite. Are you ever going to get chilies? No. Not just even once out of 99? No way. What if you had a packet of cherry seeds and you planted all of them and you got all these cherry trees and a little chili bush came up? What's happened there? Chili seeds. Correct. That's right. So when we say karma is definite, that's what we mean. It's definite that you're only ever going to get chilies from chili seeds. That's it. So that's what we mean, that the result is similar to the cause. The result of chilies is similar to the cause, chili seeds, never cherries. So a result similar to the cause, if we want a pleasant result, we've got to have pleasant causes. It can never come from violence or force. And what's difficult to grasp about this is that it's not the external action, but it's the motivation of it. Because, for instance, without knowing a context, you might slap a child's hand. So what determines whether that's a positive or negative action isn't that you slap the child's hand. It's context, isn't it? What if they're about to put their hand into the fire or onto the stove? You're not going to go, hang on a second, darling. You're going to go whack to save them. So that's intention, right? It's intention to help. But you can slap a child's hand in anger, can't you? Very different. So that's what it's not inherently good or bad. An action isn't inherently good or bad. What makes it so is the intention. This is one that we come back to again and again to refresh our mind, because it's good to have the algorithm, but to actually put it into practice is really challenging. The second one, karma is expandable. This is a little bit easier to get our head around, because just as a seed can develop into not just one more seed, but whole orchards, trees, apples, places to sit underneath, huge amount. From one tiny little cause, it naturally expands given all the conditions. So same with internal cause and effect. It naturally increases. So even very small positive actions will naturally increase over time, which is good. So that means don't underestimate even small positive acts of kindness or being patient. That has a tendency to increase over time. But also the just haphazard sharp word to somebody, or a, you know, a little retaliation here or there, that also has a potential to increase over time, the results. So it's just a natural phenomenon. There can be no result without a cause. Just praying for cherries will not bring cherries. You can have real sincerity and perfect concentration and pray for hours for cherries. If you don't put the cause in, it's not going to happen. So we need a cause. And the cause isn't an external thing. With karma, it's an internal thing. So an example of this is like with businesses. People are always trying to find what is the keys to success with a business. And it's mysterious, isn't it? Because, you know, people can open a shop in the same location. One does really well and one does not. And then third person comes along and makes pots of money with a theory. Why? Because we're grasping at it. Well, the theory is really easy. It's like, if you don't have the cause for success, success is not going to come. And the cause for success isn't having the right shop front or the right staff, it's having the karmic seed. So the karmic seed for having a flourishing business, abundance, all of that is in the past having practiced generosity. And if we don't have that karmic seed, doesn't matter what we do, it's not going to work. Just like praying over a hole in the ground will not bring cherries. It also means that we can find ourselves in situations where we can be in quite a hair-raising situation and yet nothing bad happens to us. So I look back at my youth and I have to say, oh, I walked around by myself in all hours of the night, drunk and disorderly, and nothing bad ever happened to me. And that certainly wasn't from me like acting safe. So that's because at that time I did not have the cause for bad things to happen to me, for being attacked or something like that. And yet other people were. So colloquial, I'd say, oh, I feel really lucky in my life, considering. And then I'm like, don't want my karma to run out, so I'm not going to push it. Make sure you create lots more good karma. We want good results. I think in terms of this one as well, like it could go a lot towards assuaging survivor guilt, because a lot of times people who survive things when others didn't have this thought, why me? I don't deserve it. I'm no better than those people. And that's true. You're not any better than those people. But it's the karmic seed wasn't there. So it didn't happen. So it's not a judgment. So it can also stop you feeling guilty about survivor syndrome like that. Fourth one, karmic seeds do not fade away. So this is where the gardening analogy falls down, because with gardening, as with my black thumb, my seeds just rotted in the ground. But karmic seeds, because they are not physical, they're imprints on our mind. They're there, just latent. And eventually they will, when they meet, so Georgie, I think you're asking, when they meet the right conditions, they will ripen. So in terms of negative ones, who knows how many negative seeds we have. We have negative conditions come along, so we get sick and all of our suffering arises. Negative minds makes it more likely that we're cranky, then we're mean to everybody who's looking after us. We create more negative karma and the whole vicious cycle starts. Or we might find ourselves in really pleasant conditions, and it makes it easier for us to be kind. And pleasant things happen to us. So it's the ripening of good karmic seeds. So before we go on, do I dare ask, what questions do you have about this? Is there anything that hasn't made sense that you like? Yeah, I hear it, but I don't get it. Yeah,
that's
good karma. Yeah, that's right. Someone does something bad, so you say a bad word and you trip over and stub your toe and you go, oh, yeah, that's karma. No, that's not karma. So we'd kind of call that proximity does not equal causality. So you can eat something and then half an hour later you get sick and you think, oh, it's because I just had breakfast. But no, actually, it could have been from 3 days ago. Just because it happened close in time does not mean it was the cause. And we don't even, as a culture, we don't even get this with external cause and effect. We ascribe the causes of things just to something really just recent. And that's not even true with external cause and effect, let alone internal cause and effect. So actually it's the two tracks going on. You're walking along, you say something really nasty and you stub your toe and you hurt your toe. So what's happened is you said something really nasty and that's laid down a karmic seed that will ripen later. But at the same time, a negative karmic seed has ripened because you stubbed your toe and you've experienced suffering. In fact, that one is finished. But you've just laid down a new one. We can have an example where, so say you get the flu. So that's a negative seed ripening into a suffering experience. The one good thing about it is that negative seed is over. That negative karma is finished. You won't ever have to experience that particular one ever again. So you can go, good, at least that suffering negativity is over. Then what we do while we have the flu, now that's a whole other thing. So again, in my youth, when I got a little confused about all of this, we were living in at the same house in Petrie Terrace. It was us kind of punk goths on one side and the skinheads across the road who we were terrified of. And so once a month it was like laundry day, you'd wash everything, you'd stay in your pajamas. All your clothes that you owned in the world would be on the line. And the skinheads from across the road came and they stole all of our jeans. And so I noticed in me this whoosh comes up of like, how dare they? I'm going to go steal theirs. So karmically, what do you think's happening here? So one is I'm experiencing the result of having stolen in the past. Now my things are stolen. And what's my response? I'm going to go steal some more. What kind of karma is that laying down? So luckily I was saved from that because I was terrified of the skinhead. So there was no way I was going to steal their clothes. So thank you. I didn't make any more negative karma. But this is what we do, is that we have this reactive response. That's the exact worst thing, because it's laying down more seeds to have more of your stuff stolen. Well, the seeds caused by the actions, and the action is determined by the intention, which is the thought. So we have the physical action that we do. That's part of it, but it's not the whole thing. The most important thing is the intention that we do that physical action. And that actually counts more than the physical action.
So if you have a thought,
it's a partial karma. If you have a thought, that thought where you go, I could just kill you. You don't act on it. So you haven't done a physical action. Nothing bad's happened. So there's no big major karma happening. But it's the thought itself still reverberates in our mind, doesn't it? It still affects our mind. It's still violent thinking. And that sets up a reverberation in our mind. But it's not a full karma. No, that's right. You can wind it back and go, no, I don't mean that actually. I hope things go better for you. Or you can go, no, I don't want to kill you. I want to kill your afflictions. So either way, you can fix it.
So you can't fix it. You can purify it.
Yeah, it can be purified. And thank goodness. So we'll do a little reflection, and then I'll tell you about how you can purify, because by now you should all start be getting quite worried, right?
So it's fair to say that things we struggle with in this lifetime, bad habits that we find hard to shake, etc., are not our fault. That they are the result of past karmic seeds. How do we take ownership of something like that from the past?
Yeah, so whatever we experience, especially in terms of our personality, is like, I think of it as like a karmic echo of the past. So then that way you don't have to think it's you. Your delusions are not you. Your afflictions, your negative states of mind, they're not you. They're like a karmic echo. And so if at least when they arise, so if you have a whole lot of negative thoughts arise, if you're completely obsessed with thoughts of revenge, and at the same time you're going, you're shocked, I don't want to be this kind of person. You can think, if because it has the momentum, that momentum comes from the past. It's not you. So you don't have to buy into it. That's number one. You don't have to act on it. You go, my thoughts of revenge are not me. They're so strong and powerful because it's a karmic result. And then we reason our way through it. This is really helpful too, especially if you're depressed or suicidal. So that is from in the past having committed suicide. And so now it's got a tendency to come up in this life. It's not even from this life. It's like an echo from a past life. So you can hear it come up and go, yeah, that's what I might feel, but it's just an echo from past life. I don't have to work. I don't have to follow it through. You just have to be alert to what's happening in the mind now. That's right. It's the key. That's really caring for the mind. And then realizing, so there's two things. One, we can purify our karma, which is why it's one of the first practices to do, because you look at this and you go, whoa, I don't want to experience all that negativity. What can I do? So there's something we can do. Yeah. But catching it first means that we don't make it any worse. We don't be reactive and make more negative karma. Okay, let's do a really short reflection so that we can. Okay, again, so curiosity rather than belief, and set an altruistic motivation to cultivate understanding that will benefit both yourself and others. We can see how our lives are like a great karma garden with seeds, soil, water, good conditions. What is sprouting now, we know, was planted quite a way back in the past, not overnight. What we plant today, we won't see immediately tomorrow. Why do we so often confuse cause and effect in our lives? Because proximity does not equal causality. What we plant today will not come up tomorrow. It'll be in 2 weeks' time. What comes up tomorrow comes from 2 weeks ago. We forget we planted those seeds. How do we actually know which actions will lead to happiness? What seeds are we planting? It's not by judging the seed's appearance. Some very beautiful seeds bring poisonous plants. Some very plain seeds grow into amazing flowers. Can the poisonous plants and harmful potentials be changed? Yes, through mental gardening. Purification removes the weeds. Fertilizer, like the enriching Dharma. And devotion, like a rain of blessings, softening a scorched earth. So today, notice what you're planting. Determine to carefully tend your karma garden. With full confidence that our happiness can ripen from causes we put in place right now. So you can bring your focus back to the room. So we've got our karmic propulsion. Karma propels us. What propels us into our future lives is all the karmic seeds that we have, all of the... you know, that our karmic results of our emotions and everything like that, it propels us. So it's not that it's foretold or it's fatalistic. It's propelled much more like, say, iron filings to a magnet. So we've got no control over it. It's just a natural thing at the moment. But like you were saying, once we start looking at our mind and becoming aware of what's happening, then we can take control over it. And then it's not so much a reactive propulsion all the time. So this great Buddhist saying, if you want to, and we had this a few classes ago, if you want to know about your previous life, look at your current body, the circumstances that you're in now. And it's a fortunate life. And if you want to know about your future life, look at your current mind. What is going on in our mind at the moment? What kind of karmic seeds are we putting down? So once we start looking at that and gently taming our mind, then we can determine what happens to us in the future. So if by now you're feeling a little worried, we can clean up our karma. I'm not going to let you leave the class without knowing about this. It's okay. There is no negative action so bad that it cannot be purified. Absolutely every single action, negative action, can be purified, no matter how horrific. Because of the nature of the mind, if we really understand the nature of our mind, naturally clean and clear, all of that karmic stuff is extra. So it can be purified. Just like the nature of water, H2O, is clear. If there's all this toxic stuff in there, even if it's like radioactive uranium kind of fallout, toxic whatever, and that water might be toxic for years and years, it can still be purified because of the nature of water. So the same with our mind. Absolutely everything can be purified. And how we do it is with a process called the Four Opponent Powers. And it is a complete method that stops karmic seeds, negative karmic seeds, ripening into suffering experiences. So it's like that mental gardening. We've got, you know, we've got a crazy mix of out of control weeds and poisonous plants, and we want to get rid of them. So how we can actually make sure that those seeds don't sprout. So the four opponent powers are regret, which purifies having completed an action. So the moment we complete an action, so you say something really nasty and the person bursts into tears and you go, oh, I didn't mean it. The moment you regret it, that's already beginning the purification. If you double down and go, yeah, well, I meant it. So we often do that, don't we? We stuff up and then we go, oh, no. So that, it's a bad feeling, regret, but it's already beginning to unwind it, to purify the negative karma. And so what do we regret? The harm done to ourselves and done to others. And it's important to regret. It takes courage to regret, to actually recognize that harm and feel regret. Then we have reliance. And so this is relying on a couple of things, but one is relying on something, you know, pure. In AA, you rely on a higher power. In other religions, you rely on God. If you're an atheist, you might just rely on, I don't know, the great philosophers or civil society or some idea of fairness and democracy. You can rely on your own good qualities, and you can rely on, if you're a Buddhist, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, something, a valid refuge that can help you. So a refuge in something that is pure and has the ability to help you, and a refuge in your own good intentions, your own altruism. And when you think about it, the whole reason that we act negatively is because we're relying on negative things. We're really unstable. Maybe we're not relying on anything at all. We've fallen off the wagon. So part of this purification is to find a reliance that's going to bring us back again to something positive. And it's got to be bigger and better than ourselves, because it's ourselves that's kind of got us into trouble. So this process, it's going to work whether you're religious or not. You can take it on a purely psychological level, or you can bring the whole depth of religion into it. It's up to you. The third of the four opponent powers is the remedy. You've got to have a counterbalancing action. So don't get confused with this. This isn't a remedy of you go and fix the thing that happened because you may not be able to. So say you said a nasty thing to someone in passing, you blah, blah, road rage or whatever it is, and they're gone. So you can't fix that. It's not about fixing that, but it's about, say, fixing your speech. So you'd have a counterbalancing activity, doing something really positive with your speech. It could be reading sutras to your pets. It could be ringing your grandma who misses you and you're like, yeah, I don't want to, just, you know, or it could be reading a story to your kids. So something that is going to be beneficial for your mind is the main thing. So actually it could be anything positive. It could be sitting doing a meditation. It doesn't have to be specifically counteracting the external thing. It's actually a remedy. Though I like to do it to do with the vicinity. So if it's something you've done negatively with your speech, try and use your speech nicely. If it's physical, try and do something physically helpful for somebody. It just kind of makes you feel better. But mostly it's to do with a counterbalancing action in your mind that's going to bring positivity to your mind. And the last one is resolve. So these are often called the four R's instead of the three R's, the four R's. So resolve is to resolve not to do the action again for a specific amount of time. And that counters the motivation. So we had the motivation to do the negative thing, say retaliating with our speech. So then we go, no, I'm not going to retaliate with my speech. For how long, Miffy? For 1 hour. Because I know I can do 1 hour. So then you drive to Carindale or whatever, someone cuts you off in traffic, you go, oh no, 5 more minutes. I can't say it. So that is very effective. If you've got that amount of time, you can hang on for that amount of time and you can do it. If you go, I am never going to say a bad thing again, how long does that last for? Doesn't. It just lasts until the next time you say the bad thing. Yeah. So if you have these four, this psychologically is incredibly powerful, but karmically it means that whatever negative seeds we have will not ripen into suffering experiences. It's like it burns those seeds. Now, the only way to completely get rid of those seeds is with wisdom, with the wisdom realizing emptiness. And that takes a long time to to grow. So what are we going to do in the meantime before we have that wisdom is we make sure those seeds don't ripen. Because, you know, no one wants to suffer. None of us want to experience those results. So there's something that we can do. And at the same time, with all of the positive things that we do, never regret them. In fact, rejoice, feel really good about them, and that makes them stronger. So it's kind of like karmic psychology in a way. So any questions before we finish up? Go back to the...
Okay.
Yeah, karma. Can't be shared, like I can't give you my karma and you can't give me yours, just like feelings. I can't give you my feelings and you can't give me. But in terms of shared, there are some karmas that are group karmas, which we all experience together. And we have that with feelings too. We can feel for others. So we experience it together with people. But, yeah, we can't. I can't take your negative karma off you and ta-da, now you're free of it. Because I'm not the one that's experiencing it, you are. And that's why the Buddha can't purify us. We have to actually purify ourselves. Venerable Rabina said this really nicely too. She said, "It's you can't outsource the purification to somebody else, just like you can't outsource sleep." And I thought, oh, God, wouldn't it be great if you could? If I could get, Chad, can you just do my 6 hours sleep tonight and I'll get all of this stuff done? It's just not possible. So, no, we have to do it. And that takes effort. And that's why we need all the conditions to come together, especially learning to meditate, to actually tame our mind so we remember to do this. There are no external things that you can say are all good or all bad. It really depends. So it depends on the intention. So you can have a rule of thumb that a positive intention with good heart will always bring a positive result. And a negative intention will always bring suffering. And working that out in actuality, it's quite a hidden thing. It's complicated. I mean, you think gardening is tricky. Planting seeds is tricky. Karma's even more so. But in terms of inherently good or bad, no. No, it all depends. Okay. So what we are now, it's a result of all the previous causes from the past. And so we can thank whoever we were. We're like our own inheritance. Thank you so much, previous life. Here I am. Wow. Must have been spectacular because here you are. What we do now, that's going to determine what happens to us in the future. And so most of the time I'm just coasting along, not doing very much, and I probably should be doing a lot more. If I'm like I am with karma, like I am with money, I'm in real trouble. And this is a big point. We've correctly understood karma when our heart breaks for sentient beings, regardless how they act, because sentient beings act badly because they're under the control of karma and afflictive emotions, and then they just make things worse for themselves. So rather than getting all judgmental, it's just like we start actually really caring about everybody. So during the week, set a conscious intention for even small actions. Really try and do it with good heart and rejoice in your efforts and the kindness of others. And what we're looking at next week is demystifying death, the dying process, what happens, how to die without fear or regret, how to help others, including our pets. So let's dedicate. So now you know we set our motivation, we've done the class, nobody's left, we've completed the class, now we can feel good about it. That makes it a complete action, which turns it into a throwing karma that will throw us into a positive rebirth in the future. So it's a really positive seed. So we can dedicate, make it really strong, dedicate for the very best possible outcome, which is your own enlightenment, so you can help all others become free of their suffering and lead them into happiness.